I asked, should I build an AI company? And he said, no, build an AI proof company, build a company that can sustain the things that our AI is going to disrupt. If I'm going to be on the internet and I have a message to spread, I want to be an individual that I'm proud of. Most people, when they fail, they don't like to look at themselves in the mirror and say, you know what? Maybe I have to change. People want change to happen to them. They don't want to change. Safeguard your time and understand that the time that you input is designed to liberate you, not for you to spend it liberating another person.
This right here is Luke Bellemare. This guy kind of needs no introduction. For those of you that have lived under a rock for the past couple of years, Luke has made tens of millions of dollars in the past 5 years, starting out in e-commerce and multiplying a lot of his wealth through crypto. Luke is known for his wisdom across Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. He shares his insights, decoding what's really happening in the world with money, the Fed, online business, Matrix, and how you, yes you, can escape your current reality. This podcast is a step-by-step process how you can escape the Matrix and make money online. Let's get straight into it. What's up, people? Before we get into this video, please make sure to subscribe, like, and comment down below so we can get bigger and better guests for you every single week. Let's get straight into the video right now.
Let's kick off. All right. One of your earlier posts from March 25th, 2021 said discipline is for losers. Mm-hmm. What is that?
So I often compare discipline to something negative, you know, because you get disciplined when you misbehave, you get disciplined when you fall short. Mm-hmm. I like to kind of spin it a little bit and say self-regulation. Self-regulation is your ability to monitor your behavior, your ability to regulate your emotions, and your ability to be in control. I don't want to be a person that's always focused on being disciplined. I want to be a person that has mastered self-regulation, a person that has mastered being able to say yes, being able to say no, and then simultaneously being able to play with the balance of balance. Most people apply self-discipline and they neglect so many beautiful things that they could experience in life because, oh, well, I just got to be hard on myself. Mm-hmm. No, not necessarily. You just have to self-regulate, understand how to manage your life, and understand that it's a lot more enjoyable when you are a person that has self-control as opposed to a person that is just following a set of rules over an extended period of time.
What is self-regulation though? Because if you regulate the wrong things, you're going to work a job that you hate, you're going to go through a path that you don't enjoy, and then you find 10 years gone down the path and nothing has changed.
I mean, I think it all comes down to self-regulating good and bad things. So a good thing at the wrong time can be a bad thing. Just like a bad thing in an opportunistic time could have a positive switch to it. So it's not about self-regulating crack cocaine. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's about understanding that if you have too much of a good thing and you don't apply this self-regulation, it can be negatively affecting you.
How does that feed into time? Because everything that has a cause has an effect. So let's say if we self-regulate today and we remove an aspect of our diet or our food or our drink, that'll have an impact in a few years' time. But how do you think about that for the impact of what you've done? Because it's a cumulative effort that applies over the course of 5, 10, 20 years.
I mean, it's interesting. I think self-regulation, you can look at it short-term and long-term. So it has short-term consequences, but it also has long-term consequences. Mm-hmm. What I always tell people is in my decision-making process, I never want to make irreversible decisions. So you never want to make decisions that you cannot reverse. So for example, I go fuck a bitch, get that girl pregnant. I can't reverse that decision. It's done. My life will fundamentally be different. Had I self-regulated and kept my dick in my pants, I would have been able to avoid decision-making, right? And consequences that will fundamentally change my life. So in the self-regulation process that I apply, I always avoid things that I can never fundamentally change. So I like to be able to, if I make a decision, because I can't see 20 years in the future, right? So those have real world consequences, these decisions. So I want to make sure that any decision that I make has a reversibility factor to it.
What about on like a micro basis? So the decisions you're making today, food, health, diet, work, where you be, what you're working on, and the impact that will have even in the short term, 6-12 months ahead.
I mean, that comes down to self-regulation with regards to how I feel today. And does this help me achieve my daily goals? So for example, if tomorrow I have a very important meeting, it would be foolish for me not to self-regulate and go out tonight super late, go party, go drink, because it doesn't play into my ethos, into my objective short term. So you have your short term objectives in order to complete your long term mission.
Yeah, of course. Talk to me about like the self-sabotage aspect around that, right? Because maybe people know they shouldn't be going out. Maybe they know they shouldn't be like abusing drink or drugs or food, but they still go and do it though. It's like, what do you think is at play there?
I mean, it's two perspectives. What I tell people in the first side of the coin is make it so hard to lose that it becomes easy to win. So if you have junk food in your house and you're overweight, mm-hmm. then what you're doing is you're creating a battle that shouldn't be there. Right. Mm-hmm. So what I need to do is remove all sort of distractions, understanding that I have a goal in mind. But most people, they enjoy to do things that fuck them up. They enjoy to do things that aren't going to push them forward because they have no objectives and no goals. That's one side. And then the other side is understanding that there's real factors of addiction, real factors of psychological warfare mm-hmm. that apply into how we operate that control us. So, for example, how do you know that going out and partying and drinking is the ultimate version of fun if you haven't experienced a plethora of versions of fun? Mm-hmm. If all you know is that, then that's what you're going to revert to. So what I tell people is don't fall into the bullshit. Don't fall into the psyop of what somebody else has told you is enjoyable. Go and explore multiple things and don't become a slave to anything. The moment you become a slave to something, you lost.
Mm. One of my observations of you is the fact that you don't have big commitments, you don't have a house, you're not stuck to one position. How important is that for you to be mobile and flexible?
I mean, it's super important. It's different for everybody. I'm also on the younger side of life, so I don't want to make decisions that anchor me in a specific location or that occupy my mental real estate. So you can only occupy your mental real estate with certain amount of things every single day.
Yeah.
So I have things that I want to accomplish. If I'm figuring out when do I have to pay the mortgage, when does the gardener have to come home, how do I maintain my cars? Yeah, some people want these difficulties and these troubles. I just find so much peace and tranquility in having an open schedule, having freedom of mind so that I can develop myself. And if I'm not focusing on leveling myself up, then I find it uncomfortable. And it usually comes when I'm obliged or obligated to do certain things that are maintenance type things.
Yeah.
And I want to stay away from that.
That's the conditioning that's happening from the very early stages.
Yes.
And you've wrote about before how if you can rewire your brain from like, you know, early stages of the impact that that's had, then you can have a life in abundance, true wealth and everything. How much do you think that it can be changed and how much do you think that can be just hardwired into us? Because people will say that the earlier years of your development will have a big impact for the rest of your life.
I mean, it's true. It is often said, I think the Jesuits say, give me a child from the age 0 to 7, I can tell you who they will be for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. Because you have this time, right, from 0 to 7, where your brain is very malleable and moldable. That's why the school system, they want to catch you early, right? That's why when you're 5 years old, they ask you, hey, what's your dream job? Not, hey, who do you want to become? What type of friend do you want to be? How do you develop a moral compass? No. What type of job do you want? What's your dream job? So you're automatically conditioned and wired from an early age. So understanding that, you can also reverse it. And what people don't understand is that there's a deprogramming process, right? And there's an antivirus that you need to apply in a filtration system as to how you operate. I call it the filtration system of truth, right? You can use the scientific method. You can use different mental frameworks that let you arrive to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And what I've understood in my career, in my life, is that oftentimes people don't stop, they don't think, and they don't evaluate the long-term consequences of their decisions. And if they did, just stopped for 5 minutes and asked themselves, whoa, is this actually good for me? Is this serving me? And many times when you answer no, you're like, okay, well, it doesn't serve me. Now, as an intelligent individual, even if I stumble and fall and I mess up, at least I'm self-aware.
Mm. A lot of the time it's the other commitment though.
Yes.
Because we talked about how you do things that you don't want to do. So let's say you get the job and you move to New York and now you've got this big ass apartment that's costing you $5,000 a month. You're tied into it for a year. So if you hate that job in Goldman Sachs,
yes,
you can't unwind from it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And it's a combination.
But you can.
You can, but it's the situation that has put you in a position
Correct.
For you to be able to
yes,
reverse
yes, yes.
engineer
let's,
that.
Let's talk about that. So this is super important. Most people, right? Most people's problems are self-induced.
100%.
So nobody told you that you have to rent that apartment. Nobody told you that you have to get that job. Nobody told you that you had to move that to that city. And what you have to do is realize that in that decision-making process, what you're doing is self-sabotaging. Mm-hmm. And what you can do is make short-term commitments, test things out, evaluate whether it is or isn't for you. And if you realize, hey, you know what? This isn't necessarily what I want in life, then you can change. I wouldn't tell a person, hey, don't go to move to New York. Don't go spend 10 grand in an apartment. Don't go. I wouldn't say that. Go do it. Test it out. Maybe it's for you. Maybe it's not for you. But don't be afraid to test it out. But then don't be afraid to say, fuck off. I'm going to go try something new.
Yeah. It's a rewiring process. Takes so long because
there's
time delay.
I think it's the identity. I think people attach their identity to, well, if I have a smaller apartment, people are going to judge me. If I have a worse job that maybe I enjoy more, people are not going to like me. Or I need to make X amount of money in order to have validation or self-worth. And these are the lies. These are the deceits. And these are the self thoughts that kind of enter somebody's mind that aren't true. Mm-hmm. So for example, let's say somebody's working a finance job. Say they don't enjoy it. In their mind, they're like, well, I still need to pay for bills. Therefore, this is what I have to do. No. The reason you have to pay for bills is because you brought those bills upon yourself.
100%.
So if you don't want the responsibility because you don't want the gig and you don't want the job, then what you need to do is unwind that process. Mm-hmm. And once you unwind that process, then you have mental clarity. Once again, mental real estate in order to make good decisions.
Well, that's what COVID allowed people to do, right? Because when you were didn't have to commute to Goldman Sachs and you were sitting at home, you freed up all this time. And I was number one victim for this because I was working in consulting at the time. And I was looking at my calendar being like, what am I doing with myself? And I was stuck at home, right? That's when I discovered Man's Search for Meaning. And I was reading that, studying that really closely. And I began to realize what I wanted. Now, that wasn't building a business at the time. It was something social. It was interaction. And that's how it started. And that was the big philosophy, was the fact that I could think for myself clearly. And that still became a multi-year process.
Yes.
To get there. So my kind of concern with this sometimes is the fact that people meet the wall of resistance. And then they realize then, this is difficult. And instead of sticking with that process, they'll just fuck off and do something else.
Yeah. I mean, you have the path of least resistance, and usually the path of least resistance, or, you know, the broad way is the way that everybody takes. It's easier to get a job today. It's easier to work a 9-to-5 today. But when you're 65, when you're 70, was that path of least resistance actually beneficial? Or did you buy into the lie that hard work or that hitting yourself against the wall is a bad thing? And what I've come to realize is that there's two types of pains in life, right? The pain of discipline or the pain of self-regulation, where you actually take control of your life and it hurts, right? Like you did professional weightlifting, you did professional training. There's a process. You probably hit plateaus of physique. You probably hit times where you hurt your body and you had to repair. These are challenges. Most people would quit. But then you have the pain of regret. And then the pain of regret weighs so much more because it weighs in your mind. And what I've come to understand is that if you can self-regulate and you can go through the pain of exploration, go through the pain of not knowing, go through the hardships of uncertainty, which comes with entrepreneurship and comes with paving your own way, it's a lot better than the pain of regret that most people end up experiencing when they don't take control of their lives.
What do you regret?
Nothing.
Over the course of the years?
Never. Because I never make irreversible decisions. Therefore, I have nothing to regret.
What have you had to unlearn to relearn?
Everything. I had to unlearn the fact that I'm not who people have told me that I am. That I'm not what, you know, a school teacher dictates that my future is. That I'm not what my parents think that I am. That I'm not what religious structures tell me that I am. That I am whoever I choose to be. And that's the most important thing that I've truly learned in my life, is that not only can I determine who I am, but in the future tense, I can, through my actions, determine who I will become.
How did you learn that process? Was that from looking at yourself, or was it like true education? Because the way you learn is pretty unique. and the way you think about things.
Like I said, Henry Ford said it best, you know, the hardest job in the world is to think that's why most people don't do it. I spent 8 years, I made a couple million dollars in e-commerce early on. And one of my deep desires was I need to learn how to develop mental frameworks. I need to learn how to think. I need to learn why I'm doing what I'm doing. So I spent literally 8 months sitting around a fire every single day. I had a fireplace in my house, just thinking about why I'm doing things, why I want things in life, who do I want to have these things with, what type of things I enjoy. And you begin to learn more about yourself the more you spend time with yourself. Most people, they sit in the car, they turn on the radio, blast that motherfucker loud, dude. Noise, distractions. They can't sit with themselves 5 minutes. They can't handle it. And it's a process of realizing that if you're by yourself and you feel lonely, then you have a lot of self-work to do. I enjoy being by myself. I enjoy being in my mind because I'm learning who I am. Most people go through life not knowing anything about themselves. They think that they're their name. They think that they're this three-dimensional piece of flesh that walks around. They think that they're their nationality or their religion. No, these are things that have been put upon you. And once you break away from these things, once you understand that you truly are a limitless individual, then the game begins. But you have to get to the point where you believe these things. The Bible says it best. The Bible says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So it all starts in the mind, because the mind, right, leads to actions. Actions lead to habits. Habits lead to lifestyle. So if you want to change your lifestyle, you need to retroactively change your mind. And that's the starting point. That's the catalyst of all things.
Something I've definitely struggled with is, you know, I'm an active guy, ambitious guy, but I would be more action than thinking. And I've had to reverse engineer that. I've had to change that and change that habit. So when I was younger, I would jump into these businesses or jump into these ideas without thinking the why or even like the how. And that actually helped to get to a certain point. But I feel like to literally transcend and become even like become better, you need to take a step back. And the challenge I have then is being able to balance the time to think with the time to action. You ever struggle with something like that?
Not really. I understand where you're coming from, but like I said, once you understand that most people don't think, you need to do the opposite of what most people do. Most people are followers. And the worst thing you can be is a follower of a follower. That's what most people are. Most people are following followers. I want to follow my conscience. I want to follow my consciousness. I want to follow my decision-making process. I want to follow my morality. And in order to get to these places, I need to discover them. And nobody's going to discover them for me. You go to a church, what, some preacher's going to tell you on a padded pew with the air conditioning who God is, what God wants from you? Why can't you speak to God yourself? Why can't you have a relationship? If that guy could, why can't I? And once you understand that what's available for other men is available to you, you begin to have a real journey towards self-exploration of self.
You mentioned there about sitting with yourself quite frequently. What's that process? So would you be writing, thinking?
Literally thinking, just speaking with myself, having conversations. Luke, why is it that you enjoy public speaking? Luke, why is it that you enjoy building digital businesses? Well, the reason I enjoy building digital businesses over physical businesses is because there's I don't like brick and mortar. Okay, well, why don't you like brick and mortar? Well, the reason I don't like brick and mortar is because my grandmother used to own a bakery and I saw her slave away. But does that mean that every brick and mortar business is going to be that way? No. Okay, perfect. So what am I going to do? Am I going to have a brick and mortar business? Well, no, not necessarily. Well, what are my skill sets, Luke? Okay, well, my skill sets are digital marketing, entrepreneurship. I'm really good at leadership. I'm really good at understanding social media. Okay, so maybe digital businesses are better for you. Okay, digital businesses are better for you. Which one? Well, what are the trends that are? And you just go through the rabbit trails and you have these conversations that most people are not willing to have with others, let alone with themselves. They just want somebody else to answer things for them. That's why when you see the comment section is riddled and filled with idiots that think that they have the answers, but all they're doing is regurgitating what another person, another follower has told them is the truth. And I refuse to live that way.
How much do you think your early childhood development has had like an impact on you now?
I mean, like we said, from ages 0 to 7 is the determining factor. Had I been raised in an environment where money was prevalent, where wealth was abundant, I would have had a different perspective. I had to retrain myself to see the abundance in the world. Yeah. I had to retrain myself to see potential and opportunity. When you come from Argentina, $200 in a suitcase, that's what I came to America with. I even though I knew there was potential, I still had a scarcity mindset. What's the difference between somebody that looks at $1,000 and says, wow, that's a lot of money, versus somebody that says, oh, that's chump change, that's not a lot of money? There's a difference in mindset, and it's not just arrogance. It's a difference in upbringing. It's a difference in perspective. It's a difference in worldview. So what I realized is that the worldview that I was given was a worldview that was propagated by governments, that was propagated by individuals that wanted to keep me down. That's why when you stand at the age of six, you get into the classroom, first thing they tell you, put your hand on your heart and pledge allegiance. Not pledge allegiance to yourself, not pledge allegiance to your purpose and your self-development. No, pledge allegiance to a flag.
It's a lack of self-sovereignty.
Yes.
People don't take personal responsibility and they blame other people.
Because it's hard.
But what I noticed, and this is why individual sports is really interesting, is because I was a sprinter when I was younger, and my parents gave me a lot of opportunity with that, but it would be quite harsh, right? You know, we're there to win. That's another idea. And when you win, you take full accountability.
Yes.
But when you lose, you also are the reason why you lost.
Yes.
You are the reason why you're in that position. Whereas you contrast that to maybe classrooms or team sports. When you won, it's everyone's winner. But when someone loses, they usually try to point something out or something around the area. So I think having that individuality allows you to, again, think for yourself clearly. And for me, it's been an ongoing process every single day. Need to look at some piece of information and see, is it real or not?
I often tell people, everyone is self-made, but only the successful people will admit it. The unsuccessful people will not admit that they created that lack of success. They will blame the big man. They will blame the imaginary thumb that's pressing them down. They'll blame religion. They'll blame race. They'll blame everything except themselves. Every person is self-made. Every single person is self-made because you are a construct of what? Your thoughts and your decisions. Nobody told you that you had to go do something. Nobody told you that you had to think a certain way. And if you did, and somebody told you that, are you a slave? Or are you a free person? And if you understand that you have freedom and sovereignty, now you understand, like you said, you're fully accountable for every decision that you make. And when you're successful, oh, you want all the praise, right? When you're successful, hey, look at me. Look what I did. I'm fully responsible for this. But it's the same thing with lack of success. And it's the same thing with failure. And most people, when they fail, they don't like to look at themselves in the mirror and say, you know what? Maybe I have to change. People want change to happen to them. They don't want to change. And when you realize that change isn't going to happen to you, you need to actually proactively determine your future. Then and only then can you actually take not only full accountability for your good actions, your bad actions, but for your full life.
Why do you think people want that life of mediocrity versus the fear of failing and doing something very ambitious? People will sit in that, it's like the bell curve. They'll sit in the middle, and instead of striving for greatness or potentially, you know, falling apart, they'll want to stay in the middle. But why do you think that deeper psychological reason is?
Because it's hard. Because it's difficult. It's difficult to have other people criticize you. It's difficult to deal with the fear of uncertainty. But when it's all said and done, you and I are going to be dead. This podcast won't matter. The successes that we've accomplished in life won't matter. The failures that we've accomplished won't matter. So enjoy life. Don't take it so seriously. And enjoy the process of experiencing every potentiality that life has to offer. And when you begin to take yourself less seriously, when you begin to enjoy life, just like kids do, dude, why can't I, that goes back to the responsibility. Luke, why did you sell your house? Why did you sell your fleet of cars? Why is it that you love just being liquid and being able to move around? Because I don't like the responsibility and the burdens of things that hold other people down. And I think there's a lot of power in that.
There was a very interesting study done of hedge fund managers and portfolio managers, whereby they were working so hard to acquire money. And as they increased the amount of time they contributed, so 80 hours, 90 hours, 100 hours a week, they actually wanted to give back money to get back their time because they had basically pigeonholed themselves and literally reversed any ability to become free. So as a result, they're these incredibly wealthy individuals, but now they've lost all their freedom.
I wouldn't say that they're wealthy. What I would say is that they have money.
They have money. One of the variables.
And I tell people, you know, I get criticized by my definition of wealth, but I think wealth by definition isn't just money, it's abundance. Mm. Abundance in every area of life. Are you abundant in your health? Are you abundant in your relationships? Are you abundant in your finances? Are you abundant in your mental kind of psychology? Or are all these things compromised over imaginary paper that you don't even own, you don't even control, that at any moment can be seized and taken away from you? And it's not only that, but it's also people attach their identities to those things. Yeah. So once you attach your identity to things that are fleeting, if you don't attach your identity to anything that's anchored in truth, anything that's lasting, then you're going to live a quite miserable life.
Mm. When you were going through like your process of how you've become wealthy and what you've learned, what do you think the core skill is that you'd boil it down to?
Belief. Belief is a skill. Belief requires so much development because it's hard to believe things that you can't see. It's hard to believe when you're skinny or overweight that you can have a six pack and that you can have a crazy physique. It's hard when you're poor to believe that one day you can be rich. It's hard to believe when your mama's working a 9 to 5 or 2 jobs that you can actually retire her in a couple years. It's hard to believe these things. But if you can actually sit there and have a conversation with yourself and believe that all things are possible, then everything is possible. Because like I said, it all starts with the mind. And the mind is the controlling factor of everything. The mind is like the steering wheel of your life. And if you can't take control of your mind, somebody else will control it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that understand how to control minds, mind control is a real thing. Mm-hmm. They understand how to move people with fear, right? We saw it, with negativity, with anxiety, with comparison. And once you can take control of your mind and believe that all things are possible, the sky's the limit.
People are becoming more familiar with like traditional media being a scam and, you know, having a decade or 2 decades long of like misinformation. Do you think that there'll be a decline in traditional media and a rise in, I would call it, personal media companies, which is like you, myself, this podcast? Or do you think that pendulum swing they'll infect it basically and reverse it because these big media companies are so large?
They'll infect it. They'll infect it because it's merely your ability to control technological advancements.
Yeah.
So the radio in the beginning was probably seldom and it was probably wholesome and it was probably good. But over time, it was controlled. Television in the beginning was probably pretty decent in the beginning. You had shows that were probably pretty good. You saw that become corrupted and censored and manipulated over time. You saw it in the beginning of the internet. People had a great time on the internet. Mm. People weren't as censored. People could actually speak their truth. Today, you go on Instagram, you write on a comment, bitch, and that will get deleted, right?
Because of bullying. Skinny or fat.
Yeah, because of bullying, right? So technological advancements initially are kind of waves of freedom. Mm. And then eventually they kind of get condensed and censored. So we are in a gap over the next 3 to 5 years where personal brands and these micro communities and these online kind of personas are trending and are popular.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, at the end of the day, there's gatekeepers to social media platforms. There's gatekeepers to access of information. And like I said, most people, you know, if they want to learn anything about Luke Bellmawr, they just go to Google and type Luke Bellmawr. And they assume that that's true, that that's the reality of Luke Bellmawr. And it's really just not. It's so far from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's controlled, it's managed, and it's segmented from truth and reality. So I think right now, yes, absolutely. People fucking hate the media. But what is holding the media from just controlling a ton of individuals at a personal level and running their podcasts and controlling the narrative at an individualistic level under the guise of individualism and personal brand. So you look at, for example, kind of Mr. Beast and his crew, right? They're all individual personal brands. Cool, but who are they managed by? Knight Media. Okay, and who's Knight Media owned by? Disney. So you basically have glorified Disney kids that have contracts that they have to say certain things, that they have to run certain agendas, and they don't really have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Mr. Beast, though. He's cool.
How can you prepare for that as a result? Because you're building your brand and you have to think like chess, right? Two steps ahead, three steps ahead. You get shot down today or tomorrow for what you say and what you do. Like, how do you still get your message out and how should people be preparing for this? Because that's what happened. It happened Tate, happens everyone, happened a lot of the scientists coming out from COVID. They're just gone, right? Wiped off the face of our internet.
I mean, you have to break the internet. You have to break the algorithm. I think Tate did a great job at that, at showing that even algorithms can be absolutely demolished with with absolute sheer willpower. What happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object? You know, that's one of these physics questions that are hard to answer. So when you have individuals that want to get their message out bad enough, not because of money, not because of any sort of agenda beyond spreading truth, then it's very hard to censor. I mean, right now we manage over 3,000 accounts, right? That's all Luke Bellmare content. We post a video every probably about every 60 seconds. My goal is to reduce that to about once every 5 seconds. So how can you ban that? How can you censor that? It's very hard to censor. Yeah, you may censor a couple pages, main pages. You may run a couple articles and talk down on certain individuals, but with sheer power and sheer numbers, it's unstoppable. There's no algorithm that can break.
Talk me through that. Like, how is that done? And like, what's even the growth of it being as a result?
Over 2 billion views, first year of content.
So let's take a step back because you're a master planner, right? So you're coming on the internet scene, you've done a bunch of shit, you know what you're interested in, you know what your values are. How do you approach this?
So the first thing I wanted to do is, you know, I don't get a ton of hate online. Every now and then I get some hate.
You're very balanced.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, my objective was if I'm going to be on the internet, right, and I have a message to spread, I want to be an individual that I'm proud of. Right. So a lot of people, they go and create content with facades. They go and create content not being who they are, not showing the reality of their situation, not showing their vulnerabilities. I don't give a fuck. Like I said in the beginning, it doesn't matter what people think. We're all going to die anyway. So I've already accepted this as a reality. So what somebody comments about me becomes insignificant and obsolete the moment I kind of put it into perspective. So, yeah, dude, I think my main strategy was, first of all, becoming a person that was potentially worth listening to, that I had some ideas or some philosophies that are worth spreading. And people resonate not with me, they resonate with truth. They resonate with what is real. And most people have that ingrained deep down. They were like, oh, well, that makes sense. That makes sense. It's not that Luke's a G. It's like, oh no, he's just sharing something that I actually fundamentally truly believe in.
Perspective shifting.
And then on the other side, you have people that kind of get bothered by my comments, and you have people that get bothered by what I believe. And once again, it's because it's a disrupting factor to their current situation. And what I've come to find out is that most people attach their identity to their ideology. So if you can detach your ideology from your identity and allow people to give you new data sets, allow you to, are allowed to probe your thoughts or criticize your philosophies and worldviews, then you should welcome it. And it's a process of self-development. Yeah, dude.
It's very interesting because people are drawn to you for the truth, just like Tate did, because it's perspective shifting. It's looking at something that's a narrative for so many years and then just questioning that narrative, and you'll get people to come to you, right? That's part of your tribe now. And that's how you've built that tribe. Question for you off that is, do you think like men are still lacking that role model and that influence?
I mean, yes, at the end of the day, you need to determine who you want to be like. You know, there's beacons of potential. That's what I call them. Figures that inspire. So my goal is just to inspire through my actions and inspire through my philosophy and inspire through my worldview. And if people join me in the journey, so be it. And if people don't join me for the journey, then it's totally cool. When you look at Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, now they're popular. They were murdered. They were murdered for their worldview. They were killed. They were crucified. They were burned at the stake for their philosophies, for their desire to change reality. And sometimes that's what's required in order to change the world. So what's cool today, you know, people like Leonardo da Vinci, they look at him as a genius, but back in the day, nobody liked him. They thought he was a weirdo. It was just a guy that was painting, you know, the Last Supper in some random mural that was a paid commission. But today it's priceless, right? So the perspective changes as time goes on. And You know, if you want to be a genius, you have to be able to stomach being misunderstood. And I'm totally cool with that.
What are some of the bigger events from history that you would keep focal in your mind today?
1913, the introduction of the Federal Reserve. 1913, the introduction of the Federal Reserve cast a dark shadow over humanity that caused us to become fiat slaves. Let me explain. In the 16th century, the feudal ages, when feudal lords used to own land and used to own their little kind of kingdoms, the peasants would come and they would work on the land in exchange for what? Food, safety, security, and a place to live. But the peasants only worked 150 days out of the year. The rest of the year they had free. They kind of did whatever they wanted. They didn't work during the winter. So why is it that all these free people are working 300 days out of the year and have nothing to show for it except the exact same things that the slaves, or the, excuse me, the peasants back in the day had to show for it, which was food, maybe a little bit of security, maybe, not if you're in London, right? And home that you don't even own. So when I tell people, hey, you're a peasant, they're like, no, I'm not a peasant. Okay, you're worse than a peasant. You're a fiat slave because you're working and running around in that rat race that was constructed, right, to keep you subjugated and controlled. Because the people, well, whether it's the bankers or the people that kind of control the narrative, and it's not just one individual, it's thousands and thousands and thousands years of people and lineages and dynasties and that understand how to control individuals, realize that it's a lot better and easier to have a slave work for you under the premise that they're free and that they're working for themselves than to whip them into submission. Because it's not ROI positive to whip your slave into submission, to demoralize him, to make him weak. No, no, no. You want the cow to produce a lot of milk. So you got to keep pumping it, pumping it and pumping it. And people realized very later on in kind of reality that this system was kind of fucking you up. And you had the introduction in 2009 of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is kind of that first competition of sound money that we've had since 1913. And that would be probably in the last 100 years, the two catalyst points that I think people should be focusing on, because people wake up and they want to work for money. But then you ask them, what is money? And they don't know how to define what is money. Who makes it? Who prints it? Who allows there to be $6 trillion printed into circulation? So under the premise, I'm going to be generous, that let's say minimum wage is $15. We'll put that at a US minimum wage. You know, the government of the United States printed $6 trillion. Divide $6 trillion into hourly wage. You're talking about over $400 billion hours of unaccounted labor. So you have this energy and this labor that's supposed to be input, right, into the system in order to receive money. But what happens if you input fake money? There's no work that validates it. So you have the actual work become diluted. That's why all these individuals are out here, which is really funny, working and working and working, and they can't seem to progress. And it's because the fiat system that was cast upon them was designed by nature to keep them as a slave. I think if people begin to study the banking system, which is breaking in real time, and begin to understand that there's other monetary tools that can be utilized to enable your ability to preserve your purchasing power and preserve your work energy, it's a good thing. I'll give you the example in a way that the audience can understand. So let's say you were doing consulting back in the day and you got a $10,000 paycheck. If you spent that $10,000 the same day that you made it, it would have been worth a lot more than it was worth today. But the thing is, it's not that the money's worth more. It's that the labor, right, is worth less. So the labor is correlated to your purchasing power, not to the dollar amount. So that $10,000 in 2010 today is $7,000. And it's only been a decade. So where is it headed? Do you think it's only stopping? Do you think they're not going to print any more money? The Federal Reserve is one of the biggest scams perpetrated on humanity. And that takes you down the rabbit hole. It's a great starting point.
Do you think it's intentional from the very beginning?
Yes, brother. Fiat system is designed to fuck you.
What's the alternative?
Bitcoin.
What do you think about a gold standard?
I mean, how much gold is there in the world?
It's limited supply.
Who told you that?
Well,
that's it.
Yeah. My philosophy on that is it's that it's harder to mine to get to the extracts, basically.
Sure. It requires energy, right? It requires energy. So the value of the gold is correlated to the difficulty and the energy that it requires in order to get it. But how much is there, right? What's telling you that they're not stockpiling this motherfucker up and just controlling and manipulating the prices? JP Morgan, $2 billion in fines and lawsuits for manipulating the gold market.
And Credit Suisse.
It's fucked.
And everything that's being, Credit Suisse, UBS in Switzerland. How do you action this information? So you notice you're a part of this system. You're already in the system.
You stop working for money.
So
let's reverse. You start working for purpose, and you start working to create income producing ecosystems. So if you're working and exchanging time, which is the most valuable resource that you have for an imaginary piece of money that anybody can make or anybody can print out of thin. Imagine being so stupid that somebody's out there printing money. Somebody's printing money, and on the counter, you're working for it, and then you're getting taxed because they need your taxes in order to run the government when they could just print it. It makes no sense whatsoever. So stop working for money. Stop working for a paycheck. Start working towards a life that instills freedom and instills your ability to produce money without you having to work. Now, that may sound like insane for 99% of people. So where do you start? You start by not spending, right? You start by not being a consumer, but being a producer. So most people are consumers. That's why they're always in the rat race. If you're producing, you're always being able to generate income, but you don't want to be producing just with your time. You want to be producing with systems. Now you have AI, now you have automation, now you have software. Dude, you can literally be making money while you sleep. And if you think that's not real, look at all the digital companies that are running. They're making money while the owners are sleeping.
One, I think, limitation that people have sometimes when they start making money, they just end up blowing it, right? But you've really focused on that multiplication, the systems, the processes, which I've been trying to stay very abide by. Why do you think people are get caught at that threshold? And like, what are the ways you've been looking at scaling digital businesses so that you're able to continue growing?
So most people, let's say they have $100,000 in the bank account. Mm-hmm. They want to show off that they have $100,000 in the bank account. People that have $1 million in the bank account, they want to show off that they got $1 million. I don't want to show off. I don't give a fuck. I know what I have. I know what I'm worth. I know what my companies are worth. I know what my companies produce. I don't have to show it to anybody. I don't have to prove it to anybody. I just have to continue operating and understanding that I don't want to spend the initial capital that required time. Because I tell people, you don't buy things. Listen to me. You don't buy things with money. You buy things with the amount of time that it takes you to get that money. So for example, and I say it quite often, if you and I were to walk into a Louis Vuitton store with somebody that works at a McDonald's, they would look at that $500 wallet a lot more expensive than you and I would. Why? Because they think, oh, wow, $500? That took me how many hours of work?
A week.
Wow, that's expensive. For us, oh, well, you know, just make a couple bucks here and there, have it in some sort of automation. You don't value the $500 because it didn't take you a lot of time. So what you need to do is safeguard your time and understand that the time that you input is designed to liberate you, not for you to spend it liberating another person.
How do you build those systems? So you focus on e-commerce, but you've done other stuff now with Capital Club. What's your philosophy, first principle of philosophy of how you're building out systems that are generating you revenue long into the future?
So there's two things that you need to focus on in business. There's income producing tasks and risk mitigation tasks. So your risk mitigation tasks in business are your customer service representatives, your accounting, your budgeting, things that you can actually delegate or offsource or onboard somebody to take on. Then you have your income producing tasks, right? These are your sales. This is your marketing, the hands-on that actually generates money. Your goal is to, as soon as possible, anytime, whether you're reselling sneakers or whether you run a Forbes 500 company, your job is to not do the things that somebody else can do for you, right? So if you're flipping sneakers, go have a runner. Oh yeah, but I won't make as much money. Yeah, but you get to save time. Yeah. Well, yeah, but why don't you value your time? Because you're not doing anything productive with that time.
Mm-hmm.
I get to hang out with the people that I love. I get to go for walks. I get to biohack. I get to travel. And I'll pay somebody or give them a slice of the pie so that I don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you get started in your entrepreneur journey, the first thing you need to do is start onboarding people that can take care of these risk mitigation tasks. Like, why are you answering customer service emails when you can hire somebody from the Philippines for $350, $400 a month, which is a good salary there, base entry level salary, to do it for you? They'll be happy. They'll be chilling. And now you have time to focus on what? Income producing tasks.
Mm.
And not even going deep into systems and operations. That's the first part. The second part is your KPIs, your key performance indicators, right? You need to know where you're going. Like, what's your objective? Most people want a fancy business in order to make money. Most people would say, oh, I'm going to build the next Uber. Dude, if your goal is to make money, you don't necessarily have to be a business owner. You don't have to be an entrepreneur to make money. If your goal is to become free, then why are you going to build a SaaS business that has tens of investors that you have to pick up the phone and be accountable to?
Yeah.
That's not freedom.
100%.
That's not freedom. And we see it rinse and repeat. I'll give you an example, which was a crazy one. Loom. Do you know the company Loom?
Yeah.
They're the screen recording company.
They just sold, right?
They just sold. And everybody's like, oh, they sold for $950 million. Go look at the faces of the founders and go look at the tweets that they were putting out because they raised a ton of money. They didn't own a massive percentage of their company and they slaved their motherfucking lives away for what? A couple $1 million paycheck? A lot of them said it wasn't worth it.
All right, people, we're just going to take one short little break for a little update about Podcast University. So if you enjoy podcasts like this and you want to start your own podcast, head down to the links down below to Podcast University. This is a learning platform that I've built to help people like you build, launch, and scale your own podcast. I wasted many years doing this, making it all up as I go. So I put everything together in a very seamless and easy to follow course for you guys to follow and just learn exactly how to do it. So if you want to bypass a lot of the mess with your podcast, check out the links down below to Podcast University and I will show you exactly how to launch and scale your own podcast.
One of my friends, I won't mention his name, but he raised a ton of money, earned 20 million, built a really big like product that kind of caught the wave before the tightening of the economy in the past couple of years. And he basically lost his head in the process. So ran out of money, business closed down. And when I speak to him, he said a lot of his VC friends or a lot of his friends who've raised money from VCs, they all say, you'll be lucky if you get out with your head because most of you will lose your head. You'll lose everything around you. Now, people cheer when you raise the money and they cheer at the launch parties, but they're not there for you at the end, right?
Bro, there's nothing to cheer when you raise money. You're raising money.
It's someone else's money.
It's somebody else's money that's there. That person is investing into you as the mule,
mm-hmm.
as the vehicle for them to multiply it. How do you get to the place where you're investing? That's why now I'm focused on private equity, venture capital. I have my fund. Why? Because I'm going to invest into hustlers, people I want to elevate, people in my community that are actually going to put in the grunt work and the hours. I'll be damned if I go fucking raise money out there to be some bitch boy slave to some white collar suit motherfucker in Wall Street that is going to call me and ask me for my quarterly reportings. Fuck that shit.
Mm. And it even happens.
Bro, I'll live under a bridge before I do that shit. No chance. That's back to slavery, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's back to being golden handcuffs.
100%.
Fuck that.
But over the past couple of years, that was considered like the proper path to build a billion-dollar
company. That was considered the proper path by who?
I know, but when a lot of VC money was flowing, people were like, go raise cash. And I was actually in that scenario. I met someone here in Singapore. I used to live here for the last couple of years. And someone was like, if you have a slide deck, we can bring it to a VC and we can raise you a bunch of money. And just something deep down didn't seem right at the time. And I was going to build like a financial product. And I was like, it just doesn't feel like aligned to what I want to do. And thank fuck I didn't take the cash because 2 years later, 90% of startups are
dead.
Yeah.
Dead. Obsolete, dude. It's crazy. And like you said, people lose their fucking mind in the process.
100%.
And I'm not about it because the entire purpose of entrepreneurship is freedom.
Question for you of that. Do you think entrepreneurship can also be a matrix? Because if you consider when people start making money, you know, they go to Dubai, they go to Miami, they get the Rolex, they get the chicks. Do you think that's a philosophy? I mean,
that's not entrepreneurship. That's lifestyle.
Yeah.
So that's lifestyle bondage, right? So you determine what you do with that money. You determine what you do with your finances and you determine what you do with your decisions. So people are a slave to lifestyle of what somebody else has told them equals successful entrepreneurship. That's why, you know, I create content. You won't ever see my cars. You won't ever see. Why? Because I don't think that that dictates successful entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. To me, entrepreneurship is I work for myself or I work in a conglomerate with a group of individuals. I set my own rules. I determine my own path and I work at it every single day. Mm-hmm. And dude, I've been an entrepreneur with $200 in a suitcase. I was an entrepreneur fucking pressure washing basketball courts. It was just the steps that I needed to take in order to be where I am today. Mm-hmm. And it's the mindset. Right? It's the mindset. It's not the bank account that matters, because you can have a ton of money and end up looking like Mark Zuckerberg. I'm not about that, brother.
Or Elon Musk.
I like Elon, bro. But at the same time, I'm a little bit tied up with Elon, bro. I'm a little bit on dual sides because he puts out hella good products, but at the same time, motherfucker controls everything. Scary, bro.
How do you think that's going to play out? Because Neuralink is backed by the government.
Did you see the new Obama produced movie? What was it called?
Oh man, I try to stay as far out from this shit as possible.
What was that? Would you guys know what it was called? It was crazy. It was Leave the World Behind, and it's apparently about this future dystopian scenario where there is a cyber attack. And the entire power grid gets turned off, okay. Right? So who owns the power grid for the standard electrical charging EVs? Tesla. Mm-hmm. Who owns the alternative internet or alternative satellites? Starlink, mm-hmm. Elon. Who owns the social media platform, the alternative social media platform? Elon. Who owns the chip that they want to implant into your brain and the AI? Elon. So he has the alternative kind of ecosystem that's being built. Perfect scenario if in the future there is some sort of power grid disruption, which most experts are saying that is absolutely plausible.
Mm. Well, everything's possible, right?
If it's possible, it's probable.
Mm. We talked a lot about information and information diet and having the right information diet, what comes to your brain. I want to talk about actual diet. Mm. So you were a vegan for a year.
Yeah.
Taught me through that experience.
It was great. I'll be frank, I was living in a life where I was eating a ton of seed oils, processed foods, garbage, and going through a raw vegan diet. What it did is it instilled self-regulation. So what it helped me do is start having more connection with my food, mm-hmm. right? So understanding why is it that I eat this? How does it make me feel? What are the pros and cons about it? Now, I wasn't able to sustain it. I think that there is a potentiality where the vegan diet is or could be a superior diet. There's plenty of studies validating it, but obviously this is one of these arguments that are eternal. But I had a great experience on it. I ended up losing a ton of weight because I didn't maintain to a super specific vegan diet. So I went back to a grass-fed meat diet and I feel great. But it kind of helped me break out of the food matrix because it made me more conscientious as to what I was eating.
Mm. My kind of perspective on diet sometimes is if someone goes from no diet, so let's say you're eating fucking trashy food, McDonald's, to having any structured diet, so whether it's keto, vegan, carnivore, it's going to be an improvement.
Yes.
It's not an optimization, but it's just an improvement, right? It's like
even at the mental level, right? Even at the mental level, because it allows you to start building these filtration systems for food. You start checking the ingredients. Mm-hmm. Well, what the fuck is red 40 tint? What is this Chinese chemical that they're putting in my food? Well, it's poison. Mm. Okay, well, what are processed industrialized seed oils and what is it doing to inflammation and cholesterol? Oh, well, let me look into that. Well, I have none of this on my plant-based raw food diet. So now I start feeling really good. I'm like, oh, whoa, I don't have brain fog anymore. So maybe I'm not stupid. Maybe I don't have ADHD. Maybe I'm just poisoned. Mm. And the rabbit trail begins once again. So it's about instilling the self-regulation that we talked about and now being more conscientious towards your decision-making process. At the same time, you don't want to go into the vegan diet, which is why I said the raw vegan diet, where you're out here eating the Impossible Burger, which is basically industrialized processed seed oils packaged and isn't really food.
Did you have any supplementation with that, whether it's tablet or even like powders, for instance?
I didn't do any supplementation at that time simply because I try to avoid any sort of supplements that are unnatural.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What's your take on supplements?
They're great, depending on which ones you take.
And in terms of like the sources of where they come from?
Yeah,
like
you need to study the sources of the supplements. Ideally, if you're going to be taking supplements, I would recommend creatine monohydrate, mm-hmm. as kind of like one of these building blocks. Magnesium, if you have a hard time sleeping, magnesium is super good for you. And I try to keep it light on the supplements. I want to make sure that I'm getting most of my food and nutrients from the food that I eat. But with that, you also have the bullshit and the psyops of them controlling the food. And when you have industrialized kind of food production, you also lose a lot of the nutrient dense kind of properties of the food. So the food doesn't taste the same. There's a reason why you eat inorganic fruit and it tastes like shit and it tastes like gross. It's because it's not really fruit. It's just industrialized, chemicalized, genetically modified food. And I think that most people overeat. Most people eat shit. Most people think that something's wrong with them when in reality they're just poisoned. And once you begin to break from a couple of these habits, you begin to realize, oh, this is a better life. Mm. And then you realize that food isn't only used to keep you stupid, but it's also an addiction, right? So why wouldn't big food companies want to create addicting factors or addicting properties to your food so that they keep you hooked? I mean, look at, not going into crazy conspiracies, but look at Kobe Bryant, right? When his helicopter crashed, which is crazy to think about, he was actually in the middle of a lawsuit. He was about to start to testify against the supplement brand that he had partnered with because they had found traces of methamphetamines inside the pre-workout. It's just to hook motherfuckers, right? So
fucking hell.
He died, but I don't know if he died for that. Who knows, right? Maybe the 20 year pilot just lost experience that one day, you know, it just made no sense. Mm. But they're poisoning your food, not only to fuck you, but also to keep you in the rat race of addiction.
Talk me through how you stay on track with your food when you're traveling, because like, even for me, like,
no seed oils, brother.
But how do you, not necessarily how do you know, but where do you eat? How do you eat? Because even for me, like in like a bodybuilding diet, which would still have a lot of fruit and veg, it's very difficult to be able to even like find it, right? Without yakking up a shit ton of like oil or fats or carbs, very difficult traveling.
It's funny. I brought a suitcase with me full of food. Obviously, like, obviously most people can't do that. I get it. But I just went to my local grocery store, figured out organic things that can actually have a 30-day, 60-day shelf life. Mm-hmm. Brought organic raw cheese. It's in my fridge. I know it sounds crazy and mental, but I feel fucking good.
Yeah.
Better than me walking into one of these places that have genetically modified bullshit seed oil food that is going to make me feel like shit. So I stick to pretty clean diet across the board, even when I'm traveling. But Asia's hard, bro. Asia is a little bit difficult with the food. I think
it's oil, right?
Yeah, I think Europe is really, really good. Mm-hmm. Most of Europe with getting rid of genetically modified and highly processed foods. Mm. And in the US, even though it's fucked up, you can still have pretty decent alternatives.
My opinion on the US is quite strange.
Tell me.
So my partner is from America. And first time I went to America was last year for a podcast. And I'm very split. I think on one side, it's impossible to be poor because there's so much opportunity. On the other side, I think it's so hard to be rich because people are oppressing you. On one side, I think it's impossible to be skinny and fit because the food is so bad. On the opposite side, I think it's so difficult to be fat because there's Whole Food and there's a lot of good food companies there. So it's so wide, and in between you have everybody.
You have choice. You have a lot of choice in the US, but people obviously go to the path of least resistance. So what I've come to realize, you look at the food companies that kind of operate in the US ecosystem, and it's controlled by four or five big conglomerates. You have Nestle, you have a couple companies that kind of run the entire game. So they give you the freedom or the illusion of freedom of choice that you, oh, look how many chip options there are. Look how many canned meal options there are. Look how many different recipes that I can actually cook up. And then you look at the ingredients and they're all altered versions of the exact same thing. For example, you go to the United States early in the morning, 5-6 in the morning, and you have four or five restaurants, McDonald's,
Chick-fil-A,
Burger King, and Taco Bell. And in the morning at 4, 5, 6 in the morning, you have Sysco, which is the food company that delivers all the same ingredients to all the businesses the same way. So yeah, they'll add a couple spices, a couple ingredients, but it's an illusion of choice. You don't really have a choice. In order to have choice, you need to make real decisions, right? You need to actually choose what you're going to eat and determine that. But once you take away that mass grade of the logo, the ingredients are the same thing from the same manufacturer.
All right, guys, one short little update for Voex. I want to give a short little overview about my own company, my media company called Voex. So if you are a company or you are an enterprise looking to grow your brand and looking to grow your podcast, feel free to reach out to work with us at Voex. What we do is a fully fledged end-to-end management of your podcast. We take care of the strategy, the consulting. We take care of the growth, the management. We take care of all the editing, all the boring stuff so you can focus on creating good podcasts and create and growing your brand. If you want to grow your podcast and get to new users, if you want to grow your business, generate more revenue and all that good stuff, check out the links down below to Voex. You can follow through to schedule a call with our team, or else you can fill out the application form to see if you qualify to work with us. Thank you.
What do you think about some of the bigger chains like Whole Foods and these brands that are meant to be healthy for you? Like even their
Whole
fruit
Foods,
veg.
Whole Foods is bullshit. So most of Whole Foods is not organic. I just stay to organic, clean, as least refined and as least processed as possible. The less ingredients your food has when it comes to looking at, dude, if you look at the back of a package of chips. And it has more than just potatoes and then some healthy oil to deep fry it. And it has all this crazy shit. That's not food. That's not food. So I like to limit how much processed food I actually intake, which is not a lot. And just stick to clean diet, bro. It's so life-changing. It's so life-changing. I think it's one of, if not the hardest things to change, because it's so addicting to get out of that. I remember, dude, I remember when I used to be super addicted to refined sugars and dude, I would tell my family or I would tell my girl, oh, I'm going to cut candy. Right. And then I would find myself with sugar cravings at 1 a.m, sneaking out of my house, going to the gas station and loading up with chips, candy, sodas, and coming back to the house. Dude, that's not fucking normal behavior. That's not normal. It's weird. That's fucking deranged behavior. That's lunacy. That's addiction. And I felt fucked up every time I did it, but I continued doing it. So if you continue doing something that you know is bad for you, but it's addicting, then you need to understand that there's a process of detox that needs to take place. Just like you would detox and have withdrawals from any sort of actual drug. Sugar is a drug. You're going to have fucking serious withdrawals. And I think it took me about two years to actually get over intense sugar cravings. But I haven't had that candy bullshit ever since.
Did you ever have a deep blood panel test done?
Yes.
And did you have any deficiencies?
No, I'm actually fucking crazy good, bro. Testosterone 1050, bro.
And did you have it tested previously?
No, previously I was just fucked up. But now, in a really good healthy perspective, I'm doing quite well.
That's amazing, man. What's your take on alcohol?
Depends, right? So alcohol is no longer what it used to be. Alcohol, the process of refining and fermenting is different. You look at Fireball. Do you know Fireball? It's like a cinnamon drink that they have in the US. The ingredients in the US are different than the ingredients in Europe. So people are like, this is a cinnamon spicy drink. And then you look at what they use in the United States to make Fireball shots. And it has formaldehyde, which is the coolant that they use for air conditioning. I was like, oh yeah, no wonder it burns. Yeah, no wonder it burns because it's fucking chemical compositions. So there are ways to consume alcohol that are a lot better than others. For example, you read in ancient texts how they used to drink wine and things of this nature. It was different, the process of making the wine, the fermentation, the preservatives and the additives that were added, the pesticides that were coming into those bottles. So I think the alcohol that you see on the shelf today is poisonous, but there's probably good options of alcohol consumption out there that have to be created and done extremely well. But I don't drink alcohol.
At all?
No.
It's all about how it's used though, right? Because... So I haven't drank alcohol for 500 days and I had a video in there recently, and a lot of the feedback comes from people is that, well, you could have it once a month and it's fine. It's like, of course you can. You can have a bottle of whiskey a glass of whiskey once a month or with your partner or whatever. And it's fantastic. You might enjoy it. But the problem is individuals will abuse that drug or abuse the option to take it.
Yeah, too much of something is always bad. Right? If I give you too much water, you're going to drown and die. Right? Mm. So at the end of the day, too much of anything can become bad. And the last thing you want to do is become an addict. Right? You don't want to be a functioning cannabis user. You don't want to be a functioning alcoholic, because all you're doing is just coping with things that you have to solve in your life.
Versus taking the action.
Or versus just allowing yourself to enter a state of sobriety and dealing with them.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about Capital Club. Mm. So, you know, there's a lot of, I wouldn't say influencers, but big creators have these private network groups. Why do you think they're growing in popularity at a deeper level? Like, why are people flocking to these groups, you think?
So let me go back as to why I created Capital Club. I was talking to one of the founders of OpenAI a couple of years ago, and he was talking about building AI companies and things of this nature. And I asked him, hey, should I build an AI company? And he said, no, build an AI proof company, mm-hmm. build a company that can sustain the things that our AI is going to disrupt. So what can AI currently not disrupt? It can't disrupt personal development. It can't disrupt community. It can't disrupt fellowship and unity. It can't disrupt these things. Tangibles, right? And social media did the antithesis of what it was supposed to do. Social media was supposed to connect everybody, but everybody feels more disconnected and isolated than ever before. So now you see the forming of digital tribes, right? People that begin to resonate with certain messages and begin to kind of group and kind of conglomerate in their own little areas of the internet. So as the internet becomes more refined, you're going to start seeing people segment out from big platforms and just use big platforms as a way to siphon people into their own networks. But I support a lot of these guys, you know, I support a lot of these guys building communities. Mm-hmm. I think that there are a lot of great communities out there. Most of the big dogs that you actually see out there that are creating content, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, compared to everything else that's out there on the internet, they're good dudes.
Of course, but they're also helping you, right? So yes. Whether it's on the financial side of Capital Club, as well as the broader wealth spectrum, even interacting with people, because you and I are kind of different, because we like both are partners, whereas for some people, a lot of guys they're building on their own. They're locked in a fucking room, right? For 6-7 years.
And it comes down to intention, you know? It comes down to intention. If all you're there to do is extract from your community, mm-hmm. then your community will eventually notice. So it's I don't give a fuck. You know, there's people out here extracting from the community. Dude, the marketplace will take care of them. I don't need to talk about them. I don't need to criticize them. The market will do what the market needs to do. It's people are like, oh, this guy's out here doing this and that. It's like, bro, go take care of your mom. Your mom's not retired. Why are you commenting on another person, what another person's doing? The internet's smart enough to eventually pull out weeds and siphon out scammers. Like, it happens. It's happening since the dawn of man. So the scammers get cleaned out, especially on the internet. But these people that are building real sustainable communities, dude, I support them, because what's the opposite of it? The opposite is a lot of these kids growing up having no role models, having no figures, having no individuals that they can look up to, and having no community. Mm. So if I can be a part of that change in some way, shape, or form, so be it.
Are you familiar with Balaji, the CTO of Coinbase?
Yes. Yeah. I actually DM'd him a couple times. We've DM'd a couple times on Twitter.
It's cool, dude. He has a famous saying that it's everyone's boss is the CEO, the CEO's boss is the market. Mm. I love that.
It's true.
Over a long enough time period, right?
Yes.
When you expand time, everything comes out, whether it's the good, the bad, or the ugly.
And it's also understanding that with all these digital tribes that are being formed, mm-hmm. you know, Balaji has this like network effect that he talks about, you know, and how you're going to have these network states that are going to be rising from the internet and creating these kind of individualized kind of societies. I can either be in a situation where I start a civil war, right? Out of jealousy or out of comparison as to what somebody else is doing or how I think somebody else should run a community or how somebody else should run a group of individuals. Or I can just be diplomatic and actually understand that there's different ways to the top of the mountain. Mm. And it's better for these individuals to be associating with prosperity, self-development, education, than being scrolling on TikTok, looking at hoes, on OnlyFans, on Pornhub, scrolling on Instagram, scrolling on Snapchat. It's like, it's just disease. So anybody that's trying to provide any sort of solution, they have my support, bro.
100%. What's been some of the biggest success stories of Capital Club?
Dude, everybody that is part of my deep Capital Club network, which you have to become a millionaire,
And how does that work? Do you just submit your bank details?
Yeah, you have to submit either verified crypto wallets or verified bank account. And it's quite expensive for that kind of elite tier. I would say the most impactful thing is it extends beyond money. It's seeing people become a better version of themselves because they're inspired by what other people show them. So for example, you know, I have people inside Capital Club that have sold companies for $50, $100, $200 million, but they come and, you know, their mental space isn't good or they're overweight and they get to be inspired by somebody that maybe doesn't have a lot of money, but they have their physique in check. So I would say that the success of Capital Club doesn't come from an individual person being like, oh, I made this guy a millionaire. No. I created an ecosystem that allowed this person to find relationships, be vulnerable, be who they are, and pursue individuals that they can learn from because they realize that there's so many areas of life that still need to be improved. So yeah, dude, I think Capital Club is great simply because it provides an alternative ecosystem to traditional media, because we have our academy, we have fucking incredible content, and it provides a network effect of authenticity, truth, and transparency, and that all you have to do is focus on becoming the best version of yourself. And if you can focus on becoming the best version of yourself, you're more than welcome.
And you're also going to become AI proof in the process.
Yes,
right?
Yes. And that's the beauty of it. So I'm building Capital Club for the next 40 years. It's a life project for me.
So you mentioned AI and AI proof. So someone like myself, I think about this quite a lot, and I'm kind of racking my head around like how you become AI proof, right? And my opinion, happy to get your thoughts, is this connection and the advisory, the person that's there to help, basically someone who can give off their experience and be the person to decide who doesn't fall into the commodity. And if you've ever read Category of One, he talks about everything in life from the airlines to the phones, they're all commodities, but everything else you can do in additional, that's what makes you unique. And that's what makes you basically a category of one. So what would be your principle on like how you actually become AI proof, because it's moving faster and faster and faster?
Figure out the things, like I said, that AI can't replace. AI is not going to lift the weights for you. AI is not going to eat the healthy food for you. AI is not going to be a nice person on your behalf. AI is not going to walk in, tell your employees, hey, how you doing? How's your family? You know, I see you struggling. Let me take care of you. AI is not going to do that for you. AI is not going to sit and pray for you and figure out what's the existential crisis of your soul. AI is there just to help you develop. And right now in its infancy, it's extremely powerful, but there's things that AI will never be able to replace. It can't replace your humanity. It can't replace your human connection. So focus on those intrinsic things that make you you. And then focus on the things that AI can't enhance, because there's things that AI can enhance for you, and polish those things. And that's what will give you an insane edge in the market. Especially physical things, dude. I see a big shift towards physical things, right? A merge between the physical world and the digital world. I see a lot of people now disconnecting from the internet, hanging out. Like, we're here in Singapore, we're doing the Glitch meetup. There's 300 plus people that are usually in this APAC region that are flying in or local coming. And AI can't do that for me, right? AI can't put all those people together in a room and create an environment where people can self-develop, talk, hang out, network. And I see a merge and a fusion of the physical and the digital that is going to have a lot of monetary value attached to it.
How do you approach that if you're not someone who's like a key person of influence like yourself? So you're starting out, you're trying to get your slice of the internet or your slice of the world.
Become a person worth listening to.
How?
Self-develop. Become so elevated that people are like, oh, this guy's different. This guy's worth listening to. Look at David Goggins, bro. That's a badass motherfucker, bro. He's the G. Like, he's at the mindset level, I need to learn from this guy. AI can't teach me how to be a David Goggins. I got to go learn from David Goggins, bro. So become a person that attracts and magnetizes through motivation and inspiration, and people will gravitate towards you. I talk about the concept of gravitas, right? Gravitas is where we get this idea of gravity, and gravity is one mass, bigger mass, always attracts and pulls to it the smaller mass. Right? So are you the mass of influence? Are you the individual that's being influenced? So if you want to be a person that's worth listening to, then self-develop.
The thing about Goggins is his impact can apply to so many people in different aspects of their life.
He's a G, bro. I fucking love that guy.
Have you read his recent book?
I haven't read any of his books. I only watch him running. That's enough for me to be inspired. Yeah. Who's going to carry the boats and the logs?
So he's obviously made a shit ton of money and so on, right? And he felt himself...
He doesn't give a fuck about the money, bro.
But he felt that he was getting easy.
The guy doesn't care about the money.
Mm-hmm.
The guy doesn't care about his haters. The guy doesn't care about the opinion of even the people that support him. The dude is on a mission to ensure that he is the best version of himself for him.
Mm.
And that is authentic, right? That to me, seeing this dude run 100 miles at 2 a.m., I don't need to hear a word from this guy. I know what is the human potential because he's proven it to me. He is a walking testament of possibility. He's a walking testament of greatness.
But he's even felt himself becoming complacent. This is what's interesting. He went back into becoming a firefighter. So he's jumping out of fucking planes to land into like the middle of nowhere that's on fire to reinstate that hunger and savageness in him. Because he even felt with the money that life is fucking easy, right? I can sit up, not do my 2 hours of stretching every single day. I'll do an hour and 45, but it's a slippery slope, right? So a question for you off that is, how have you maintained your high level of performance and frequency? Because anyone can make a bit of money, but it's 8 years for you. It's 4 years for me. How do you keep at that level?
It's understanding that money and success is a lagging indicator. So what you do today, you're not going to see the money of what you do today. So you'd be an idiot to assume that when you're making money, it's because of your actions of that day. No, you're making money today because of what you did all these other years leading up to the money. So if you stop doing those things, the future is going to reflect the present action because money is simply a lagging indicator. So when you know that money is a lagging indicator, what you want to do is position yourself to consistently be doing the things that yield you long-term results. And most people, like we said, they make a little bit of money, they get complacent. Why? Because they think that what they're doing today is bringing them money. No. What you did before is bringing you the money today. So ensure that you continue doing those things today so that that brings you money in the future. It applies with money. It applies with physique, right? You don't have a great physique today because of the fact that you went to the gym yesterday. You have a great physique because of every single day that you went to the gym leading up to this moment. And if today you become complacent and you stop exercising consistently, in the future, your body will morph and your body will become a reflection of your actions. So money, success is simply a lagging indicator. And when you understand that, you play the long-term game.
That's really fed into how you've learned and how you've been able to implement those steps too, right? And I want to take this direction around sales and persuasion. So you run like multiple different businesses, but how do you think about sales? I know you mentioned Zig Ziglar a few times. What are some of the influences you've had in sales and how do you think about that process?
We live on an economic planet, right? Most people fear selling. Most people fear selling because either one, they fear that they're going to be judged, or two, they simply think that it's immoral. But when you understand that something can be offered that is of high value and that is good for people, I want people to take it. For example, let's say there was a stranded individual with a ton of money in the desert. I would go sell that motherfucker water. Right. And I wouldn't feel guilty of selling him tens of thousands of bottles of water, right? Under the premise that that's what he needs. So most people that don't make money is because they don't develop the fundamental skill set of selling. But every day you're selling. You're selling your girl to stay with you. You're selling your audience and your podcast to continue listening, right? You're selling yourself to continue doing it. So developing the essential skill of selling is basically your ability to convince individuals that what you have to offer is better than what they have to offer you, which is money. So as long as what you have to offer is a higher value than that what you're selling, then you're good. Now, that's on the first side. The second part is the people that sell just to make money and they don't care about what it is that they're selling. If you sell something to somebody that they don't need, right? If you sell something to somebody and they don't actually need it, you're not a good salesman. You're a con artist because you're selling something to somebody that actually doesn't need what you have to give them. So there's a fine balance and you don't want to be the used car salesman, but at the same time, if somebody doesn't have a car and they have the money, sell them a car. It might be beneficial to them.
Are you familiar with gap selling?
No, tell me.
Oh, I should have got you that book. You'd actually really enjoy it.
Is it good?
Gap selling is amazing. The guy that wrote it is called Keenan. Definitely read it, check it out. His whole philosophy is understand the gap, the current state of where they are. You can play this in Kappa Club. So current state, future state, looking at firstly the numbers. So where are they, right? So let's say you use your health, you're overweight, let's say. You're overweight. How does that make you feel? Let's get the right numbers in place, exactly how that affects you. Understanding the problem. So why are you overweight? Oh, you have a bad relationship with food, so on and so forth. Understanding the impact. Now you can't pull up your pants, you can't hang out with your kids, you can't teach people anymore. You're just the massive impact from that. Understand the root cause. Oh, it goes all the way back here, and the future state. So if you can map that clearly out for someone, you can say, yes, this is a great solution for you, or no, here's my friend. Let me refer you to someone else who's going to be better than me. And they will decide if this is, you've given them the gap and they'll be able to see how big the gap is. If the gap is small, it's fine. They shouldn't buy. But by creating that large gap, they can go off and do.
And that's part of the sales process, is helping people realize those gaps, right? So you have attention gaps, you have educational gaps, you have information gaps, you have access gaps, all these things. If you can showcase a person, hey, like there is a big enough differentiator where by buying my product or by utilizing what I have to sell you, that it can fundamentally make you or serve you well, then I think it's beneficial. But I think a lot of people shun selling. They hide away from selling, or they criticize people that are really good at selling. And there's no shame in it whatsoever, as long as what you're selling is actually valuable to the person buying it.
Yeah, because you're able to understand the actual problem, yes, right? And give them actually a solution. How does that feed into Kappa Club? Because I know you have a huge demand, 200,000 people or even more at this stage wanting to get in, and no supply. So you're not really leaving people in, is that correct?
Correct.
How do you think about building up demand, creating tension, and being able to create a great product so that when you open the doors, people come true?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we only open it up to 369 people a day, right? So 369 people sign up every single day, because there's basically your ability to compete to get in, because we invite X amount of individuals. I think it's about 2,500 people a day, but only 369 people can get in. But if you do the math of $369 times 369, you're talking about $130,000+ net profit a day. So I make a ton of money. It's just, it's in the numbers. You just have to be able to play the numbers. And I don't need to make $10 million in one day. I just need to bring in high quality individuals, because my goal isn't to make 130 grand net profit a day. That's cool. Yeah, business partners, that's not my money. That's the company's money. That's the club's money. My goal is to build an ecosystem that is really good. And that ecosystem, I can't flood it with people right away, because it takes time. It takes a process. It takes development. So since I'm not broke and I'm not in a situation where I'm hungry for money, or, you know, I am kind of nervous that I got to pay my bills, or, you know, I have so much overhead and expenses that I have to go do some gimmicky bullshit, then I can take my time, because money is no longer the objective when you have enough of it. My objective now is to build the largest entrepreneur network on the planet, and I'm going to do it.
Talk me through the marketing of that, because I know you have stories that appear and disappear and then they're gone, and you take down videos and so on. So is that part of your marketing? Like, how do you think about that?
Well, not really. I think that if you actually care, you'll show up. So why should I keep my information open and available for infinity? Why? Because somebody else told me to? No, I don't know. If the internet didn't exist, you would have to show up.
That's what happened back in the day.
Yeah. So you're going to have to show up. If not, the information might not be there tomorrow. So yeah, sometimes I delete posts. Sometimes I delete videos, under the premise that I think that they're highly valuable. And if you sought out the information and you got the information, you should have an advantage over the people that weren't intentional to get it.
Where does that philosophy come from? Like, did you learn that, or did you look back at history and think?
Not even. It's just, there's a verse in the Bible that says, don't cast pearls to swine. So if I think my shit is highly valuable and I think it's really good for the market, then why would I want everybody to know? No, hell no, bro.
That's interesting.
Once it hits 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, I'm deleting that shit right away, because I put out some valuable bangers. There's some stuff that I put out that is really deep, top tier level information. And what the people that don't pay attention. That's one. Two, familiarity breeds contempt. So if I'm out here just blasting content every single day, you're just going to assume that it's readily available and you're just going to fuck off. No. If you want top tier entrepreneurial content, you want to develop and you want a great community, you're going to have to show up. just like everybody else that actually once it shows up.
But that's interesting because you're putting out so much content a day, but then you're restricting some of it then coming back. So people have to basically jump around for this piece of content.
I don't even have a ton of content. I mean, 2023, we did 2 billion plus views on 10 podcasts, 10 vlogs, and maybe 20 other pieces of original content. So I don't make a ton of content. I just understand how to distribute content extremely well. So if a video gets 1 million views, I know that that same video can get 50 million views. I just have to market it extremely well. So I look at content more like winning products in e-commerce because that's my background. So my goal is to find a winning product, aka a winning piece of content. And once I have it, is scale that winning piece of content to the moon. So like I'll have one podcast. Okay, perfect. On the main podcast, let's say we do this podcast, gets a couple hundred thousand views. No, this podcast will get 50, 100 million views because once it's validated that it's a winning piece of content, I just have to scale it to the infinite.
Why do you think people can't do that themselves? Like what's the attributes, sorry, that they don't basically have to identify like a winning podcast or product to be able to scale it because people will just put out a shit ton of average stuff?
Because they think that that it's a numbers game when it comes to content creation. It's a numbers game when it comes to content distribution. It's two completely different scenarios. If you can't distribute content, it's like Peter Thiel says, you don't have a business. You don't have a business. If the way that you distribute is by creating a ton of content every single day, then you're just basically spamming the internet with original content. I'm going to spam the internet with limited high quality content, which is a completely different scenario to what everybody else is doing. But I'm going to start ramping up my content. Now I'm going to fuse a ton of top tier content with a lot of content, original content. And my goal is probably 10 billion views 2024.
What's your observation for 2024 in terms of trends, businesses, even like monetary policy?
Let's talk about a couple trends for 2024 I wrote an article called Predictions for 2024, and some of them already occurred, right? So I predicted, you know, like most people, that the Bitcoin ETF was going to take place. It happened. The middle class being priced out of a Bitcoin, it already happened. I see direct-to-consumer brands highly focused on the health and wellness niche. I see a lot of e-commerce opportunity when it comes to politics, right? So anything that has to do with the election that's coming up, there's a lot of money to be made. I remember selling little gold coin last election that had Trump's face on it, profile face, and I made $1.6 million in sales, right? Why? Because it only made sense at the time. Yeah. Obviously, that won't sell now, but it did extremely well. So trends that I like to kind of observe are in three categories: e-commerce, which is where I'm experienced, money in markets, which is kind of general macro understanding of the markets, and then cryptocurrency and kind of DeFi, decentralized finance. So on the e-commerce side, you're going to see a lot of, I think, once the printers pick up again, you're going to see a lot of mergers and private equity come back and start buying these micro brands and these small companies to put them under an umbrella and kind of have them under a holdings company, which is kind of what we saw over the last couple of years. But like you said, with the recession and the money printers being turned off, that slowed down. But you're going to have a huge potential in the health, beauty, wellness niche. Longevity is absolutely crazy. In the money and markets, US is going to continue printing out of thin air. It's just inevitably going to happen. I think that there's a high upside on stocks that are undervalued right now, like PayPal. PayPal is going to absolutely smash it. Shopify is going to continue leading e-commerce and have Robinhood start becoming popularized with retail again. So you're going to have a couple of stocks that are going to perform extremely well. You know, last year I called the kind of the tech rebound on stocks. So I allocated 10% of my net worth into Meta stock when it was about anywhere from $90 to $77. It was layered in. So it was a pretty good buy. And on the DeFi / cryptocurrency side, I think we're going to see a huge competition between traditional finance and DeFi because the tools that are being implemented in DeFi are absolutely insane. You look at new tools that are coming out, new platforms like Jupiter Exchange, on the Solana ecosystem, you see enhanced products that basically look like traditional finance. It's really crazy. I won't do it now, but if you go on the App Store, you tap the search, you input Phantom Wallet, which is one of these DeFi wallets. You download it. you create a crypto wallet on it and you go to the exchange and somebody sends you, let's say $50 in Tether, $50 in USDC, you could be trading or you could be in the market buying crypto within 5 minutes, right? If I wanted to open up a bank account, then I wanted to open up an E-Trade account or an Ameritrade account, I would have to get KYC'd. I would have to wait 3 to 5 business days. I would have to suck somebody's dick if I wanted to pull my money out. I'm good, dude. Mm. So you're going to see a big competition coming from the non-KYC decentralized finance space to really come and fight for the market. And the market always gets what the market wants. Mm. So when the market gets saturated at the bullshit, like for example, today, I wanted to send a $500,000 wire, right? I got all these questions. Where are you, who are you sending it to? Why are you sending it? What's the business registration of this other company? Do you have invoices? Do you have the communications? Do you have the terms of service? Do you have the agreement? I'm like, who the fuck are you? And I get it, right? Because on one side, you have the anti-money laundering and you have OFAC and you have all these companies that are basically slaves to whatever the government's telling them. But the internet is democratizing that and it's creating a ecosystem where builders are creating products that the government won't be able to stop.
If you ever see the statistics around anti-money laundering, it is literally a tiny fraction of what actually they've done to build up all this like infrastructure and everything. It's like,
it's a scam.
It's the biggest illusion of all time because apparently like, there's no implementation.
Dude, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with 9/11. They started implementing. US is supposed to be the freest country in the world. Where else in the world do they tell you to take off your shoes when you go through security and they check and they pat you down and touch your nuts and you're not supposed and you can't take water on the plane and dude, what the fuck? It's all the governments do is create a crisis and then take more freedom. Create a crisis. Take more freedom, create a crisis, take more freedom. So it's the same thing with the governments. It's the same thing with the banks. Oh, well, they're money laundering or North Korea. Bro, how many people are out here sending wires to North Korea, motherfucker? I don't need to be out here doing all this KYC verification, but I get it because if you're in business, you have your bank identification number, you have your license, you have your charter. And if you don't follow the rules, they'll pull that shit from you. So it's either telling the customer to KYC and do all this policy stuff, or you end up being in a situation where you don't have a business. I mean, look at Binance, bro. I invested in Binance when it was $2 in 2017, when it was the fucking hottest exchange in the world. I could do anything that I wanted on there. It was pretty good. I didn't have to do all this KYC nonsense. And now it's run by the US government, right? So now it's fully controlled. It's fully kind of regulated. And it's kind of the inevitability of big government. So I see that changing soon.
And the irony of this, before we finish up, is the fact that even banks that are heavily regulated are also fucked. So Peter Schiff with Euro Pacific, he had everything audited for 4 years. There wasn't one missed transaction. And usually there's a leeway, you know, like 2% or 1% of transaction. There's a leeway, of course, like in accounting. He didn't have one misspelling for all his years and they came and took his bank and it's over. And the reputation was such a big impact that he couldn't come back from it. And what the irony is, the bank was already sold to a Texas-based bank and he was getting it off his plate.
Crazy.
And that's the situation he's in now. And it was all his own money. I think he put up 10 to 40 million of his own money and it's all gone. And sorry, last thing I'll say on this is 62 million of customer deposits is on hold.
Wild.
That's the biggest impact.
Wild. Wild. And yeah, that's what happens when you are institutionalized and when you're a slave to the system. You have to play by the rules of what some bitch motherfucker in a white collar tells you that is or isn't supposed to be the rules of the game. Fuck them. Let's continue building DeFi. Let's continue elevating these digital tribal formations. Let's continue supporting these internet creators, these people actually want to see a better future. And I think the sky's the limit, brother.
Luke, let's say a massive thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, homie. Hashtag undeniable in the comment section if you want to live a life that is undeniably, visibly the best version of yourself to inspire others. Cheers, motherfuckers.